short end of that stick.
Oh, yeah.
So to speak.
All right. Hello.
It is 38 seconds after the hour of 12, and this, the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed and not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is Rick Emerson's radio program. Greetings and welcome to Day 12. Thank you for coming by. We're here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. If you'd like to be part of today's program, for whatever reason, it is 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. We have the most horrific thing you've ever heard out of the mouth of Jessica Simpson. We'll be getting to that in short order. One of those quotes, Sarah just read this Jessica Simpson quote to me moments before we were going on the air, because as we always say, it's the moment, not that the show itself is not of the highest quality. It is, I assure you. But it's those moments before the show and after the show where things really, the reptiles are really coming out of the rug. And it's, you read me this Jessica Simpson quote, which I did not believe was real. See, when you read the quote from Jessica Simpson just now, I thought it was one of those Page Six sort of overheard at Spago things, you know?
No, it says she's quoted in the magazine.
On the record is saying that. You don't say that, even if it's true.
You don't say that.
And we all know it's not true. We all know that that's coming from a very, very bitter place, so to speak. It's coming from a very bitter...
And even if it is true, you know, he has everything else going for him.
Yeah. Her comment is coming from a very bitter and apparently cavernous place. And so forth.
Hello.
Broadcasting from deep within Jessica Simpson. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's Rick@RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. And that swishing noise you hear in the background is the sound of all of us simultaneously lifting, opening, swirling, and then consuming many bottles of V-soap, about which we will be speaking later today. I think we have talking about them. It's 503-733-2970. Before we progress any further, ladies and gentlemen, let us now welcome... Wayne, hold on. Where did I put the thing? Let us now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. Oh, that's me. We should turn that back up. Take two. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
A postman is a person in your neighborhood.
Our good friend, mailman Chris, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson Radio Show. How are you, sir?
Muy bueno.
Okay. All right. So we are going to give a brief overview. Now, yesterday, not only we got to almost everything. We got to everything but Peter Carlin. Although, in my own defense, Scotty informed me later that we never really were able to get a hold of him, even had we wanted to interview him. Had we had time for Peter Carlin, we did not. We ended up having to bump him yesterday, as they say on late-night television. We weren't able to get a hold of him anyway, so it really wasn't my fault, regardless.
He's still in the green room.
He's still sitting there rotting away. But we got to everything at the city desk yesterday. For the first time ever. And so there were no push-ups added to the pile yesterday. It was a glorious day for all of us. So what is the tally as of today?
The tally is 46.
All right, that's not so bad. All things being equal, that's not so terrible. All right, here's what we're going to do today on today's Rick Emerson radio program. We have a snuff watch coming up, clown watch, Darwin watch. Those are all coming up. We will talk about Storm Large, and we will do so with dread in our hearts and fear in our souls. And this is just based upon... largely based upon the stuff that Storm told us last, yesterday when we were talking to her. And we asked her, and she actually swore like a truck driver when describing this. We had to bleep part of it out, but we said, because they taped tonight's show on Sunday.
I had a radio nightmare last night about swearing on the air, too.
Really?
And we couldn't find the dump button.
She's looking around.
Yeah.
Buried under some stuff.
Those are talk radio dreams.
Totally. Well, we've talked about that. I had the dream that the phones are ringing, but I can't answer them. That I press the button and they can't be picked up. Which sort of happened to me this morning, by the way. I'll talk about that in a second. I did actually have a radio nightmare sort of come to life this morning. But we talked to Storm yesterday and we said, how did things go? Because they taped Tuesday night show on Sunday. She goes, oh, it was effing terrible. Or I got effing spanked or something like that. And then I talked to, I guess I can reveal this, I talked to her Davey Neeples, musical director for Storm and the Balls and Storm's, and official Storm snuggler. I talked to him yesterday, He did confirm that apparently things went poorly on some level. And I don't know what that means. And to tell you the truth, I don't want to know. I don't want anybody to call and tell me the spoilers. I just know that things went sort of badly for Storm on Sunday. So I guess we're going to be at Dante's tonight. We'll find out the deal. Big news coming up at 1 o'clock today. We will be interviewing David Ellis, director of Snakes on an MFN Plane. As we count down on this, National Snakes on a Plane Week. Coming up today, we will interview David Ellis, who directed Snakes on a Plane, along with Aaron Duran and Scott Daly from FilmViewRadio.com. They help put that together. Week in Geek today. I believe Dennis Pitzenberger is going to be in the house. And then we've got from our good friends Don and Mike, who air on this very fine radio station from 7 to 11. We've got advice for the AM 970 sales department from Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara of the Mike the Don and Mike Show. So that's coming up later today. Sales advice. So if you are a salesperson here at CBS Radio Portland, if you are entrusted with selling AM 970 KCMD, we have sales advice for you. Direct from Donna Mike. That's courtesy of our good friend Sue Falco at Westwood One.
So, rest those stilettos and listen up.
You're not too far off. I think they used the word lubriderm three or four times. So there you go. That's where we're going to get to. Have you got all that, sir?
I do. I have a Snuff Watch, a Clown Watch, a Darwin Watch, Storm. We're going to talk to Snake from MSM Plane, director David Ellis.
Yes.
And Geek, Dennis Bonaducci will be in the, possibly. And,
yes.
Don and Mike with their sales advice.
Absolutely. And we'll check with you at the end of the program to see how I've done.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. There you go. Mailman Chris. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you today?
Hello. I'm doing good. I got a special present when I got in today. It is special, and it is a present.
It is a special present. Would you like to tell everybody about that?
Yes.
You can go to Sarah X. Oh, no. Now, here's the thing. I went to your website. Laura told me about Sarah's website last night. I don't know if it's been fixed, but, you know, last night your website was just entirely down. And it was just, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a buzzkill, but you should know about this.
No, that's why I started the other one, because it was sucking up the bandwidth on that server,
well,
and it was...
I keep meaning to have Joni just change the Sarah X. Dillon link on my page so that it goes to whatever, your blog?
It goes right to it now.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good.
So see,
okay. It is working now. Because last night it wasn't. Last night you would go to SarahXDillon.com and it was like, this website currently parked by GoDaddy.com. Like, it was one of those weird things, like when the domain lapses or something. It was looking really strange. But you got a great... Now, this is not a plug, by the way. We should know this is not any... There's no consideration having been given for this. This is a thing that was... A present that was dropped off here for Sarah that we are mentioning simply out of gratitude and recognition of the folks who dropped this off. You can see a picture of this at Sarah's blog. Just go to SarahXDillon.com.
It's very incredible.
So rad.
And I...
It was just sitting on the chair. I thought that maybe you had stuck it there, but you hadn't even seen it yet.
It's not for me. It is, and I know that it sounds strange. I'm excited about this, but if you see the picture of it, you'll understand. It's a handbag.
Yeah.
And it's a very cool, and it's not creepy. I know it sounds creepy, but it's a handbag that's sparkly and glittery and sort of cool and Naked City looking. But it's got Storm's face as part of it. It's hard to describe. I'm making it sound really Silence of the Lambs. It's not. It really is very cool looking. It's kind of a cool, retro-studded sort of handbag with Storm's face.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those old school, like, they make bags like this that have records on either side.
Yeah, and Jen, who's Aaron's significant other, makes them out of, X-Files trading cards. Like laminated X-Files trading cards that a whole handbag has been made out of. They're pretty cool, actually, so.
It's easy access for the airport.
Yes, exactly. So that's great. And I have to say this, just in all honesty, because we poked so much fun at Sarah for coming in here and only having occasionally bathed or changed her clothes or... Well, you know what I'm talking about. It's true. No, I washed my hair this morning, which is, you know, and I hadn't done that in a couple days, and so my hair's got a brand new luster and sheen to it because it's clean, which it hasn't been for a while. Because, you know, it's like I could either wash my hair or I could lay on the couch some more. And that latter always seems to win out over the former. I was going to say, you look fantastic. That's a great outfit.
Thank you.
I say this to Lara sometimes because she... Lara will be the first to tell you that she is a woman, but that she is not especially gifted in the fashion. Some people, men and women, have a gift for the fashion and eye for putting together an outfit. Some do not. Lara is fully aware that she's gifted at many things, but she is not especially gifted at picking out fantastic outfits and putting clothes together. She's not... And have we said this on the air about that other person we know that's not really good at dressing themselves?
Yes, yes.
Storm?
Yeah.
I mean, and Storm and Davey are both very upfront about this. Is Storm?
No, Storm, yeah, she
doesn't know how to dress. She just doesn't know what to wear. And so Lara's the same way. So, but when Lara puts on a great outfit, I will actually, it's like bookmarking a favorite on the internet. I'm like, bookmark that. That's a great outfit. Make a note of it. And so she will sort of flag and like mentally put it into Filofax, like a great outfit to wear. That right there, that's a great outfit today. That really is a fantastic look you have
Thank
today,
you.
So just make a note.
I will not be flagging it.
All right, I'm just saying. Tim Riley is at the city
He's
desk.
Drinking his Viso.
Drinking his Viso.
It's delicious.
Preparing the following stories for today's Ministry of Truth.
An innocent little Oregon girl is attacked by a deer in the forest. Seniors have scammed out of tickets to see Oprah. Bed bugs, our newest epidemic, now invade Minnesota.
Fantastic.
And she may be CBS's superwoman, but it's family first for Katie Couric.
Okay. All right, so there you go. So that's all. There's all that. And we should talk a little bit about that. I still have no idea how we're going to be giving away these tickets to Snakes on a Plane. And that is Thursday, this coming Thursday.
Maybe a spelling bee.
August 17th. That's not a bad idea, actually.
See? I come up with great ideas.
A spelling bee is kind of a great idea.
I think so.
Because, you know, we have such a long history in this program of talking about spelling bees.
And it's an educational program.
And you could spell like a bunch of geek words like Vulcan, you know, and dilithium.
Mm-hmm. That's something to think about.
That's not a bad idea.
No, you just have to spell certain types of snakes.
That's, Anaconda. There you go. Like a water moccasin.
Mm-hmm.
Spelling bee, eh?
Yeah.
Hermano, eh? All right, okay. That's genius. I'm writing that down. Okay. Well, here's the other thing, though. You send, if you have an idea, because here's the thing. I got Snakes on a Plane tickets to give away for this Thursday. There's not very many of them, because they were very hard to get. New Line is, man, they're ruling over that movie with an iron fist. So if you have an idea about how to give away, because I'm, you know how Storm can't dress herself? I can't give stuff away. I don't know how to do it. I'm terrible at giving things away. I can never come up with anything creative or interesting or original. So I always just do like Caller 5 or whatever, but obviously we can't do that here. So if you have a fantastic idea for how to give away our Snakes on a Plane tickets, email that to rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. If you've got an idea for how to give away Snakes on a Plane tickets, email your idea to rick@rickemerson.com. Ideas that involve public humiliation are always best. If we pick your idea, you yourself will win a pair of tickets to Snakes on a Plane. If you come up with the idea and the mechanism for giving them away, you'll win a pair of tickets for that. All right, so there's that and so forth. It's 503-733-2970. Lisa Goddard from CNN Radio going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour, back after being in the Middle East, and then she's gone to combat training already, hasn't she? Do we know?
I think, wasn't that what she was doing?
I thought she was on vacation. Well, we'll find out.
Maybe boot camp.
Right, because they were giving her that Nanette Sosa combat training before she heads back over to the Middle East. Also, Jim Roop later on. Ladies and gentlemen, let us now go to the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the city desk, Tim Riley.
From higher top to bottom of the coin, entire downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the Ministry of Truth. Tim Riley reporting. Oh my, what to do. FEMA will begin changing locks on the trailers used by the families left homeless in the recent Gulf hurricanes. It turns out that some of the keys can open several of these trailers.
Wah, wah. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that sound? All right. Let's see. Hear me.
The 118,000 travel trailers that we have right now in Louisiana,
keys.
Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas have the possibility of having a lock set similar to one maybe 50 trailers away.
Okay, so there you go.
118,000. That's
so this all. So this is what people were telling me about my truck, which was stolen. Mm-hmm. And I got supposed to. I don't suppose it hurts to talk about the truck now. It's already gone. That we had a Toyota 4Runner, and somebody told me this is always one of those stories you hear. And you think it's fake. You think it's one of those don't swim, you know, until 30 minutes after you've eaten. But you always say that, well, you know, there's only 5 Toyota keys. And, you know, every Toyota key can open, you know, the odds are 1 in 5 that your Toyota key will open something else. Which you hear, but you like, that can't possibly be true. You always assume that that's just got to be some made-up crap that people say.
My friend has a Honda key and let her friend borrow the car to go to the store to get something.
Is this where she went to a different car in
no,
the same parking lot?
No, I saw it actually happen. No, it was parked on the side of the street. This happened, like, a few weeks ago. ago. Got into the Honda, turned the key, the ignition started driving off in the wrong car.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No.
So you always hear those stories.
What year of Honda
I actually
is this?
Saw it happen.
Hey, but you were there. You saw it.
I was there. I saw it happen. She got into a completely different car.
Fantastic.
Unlocked it, turned the key, started driving off. And Delane starts running down the street like, come on.
Oh, it was Delane?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. She won't have that problem with Natchi. People in Wenatchee, they're not able to drive Hondas there yet. Still driving Datsuns. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, because of terrorists, we face a lot of changes that are expected to endure with us for years. The president says, once again, the U.S. is safer than it has been, but not quite as safe as we might like it to be.
The enemy has got an advantage when it comes to attacking our homeland. They got to be right one time, and we got to be right 100% of the time to protect the American people.
While many parents are sending their children back to school, former NBC Today host Katie Couric, now with CBS, will be doing exactly the same thing. Katie says she's looking forward to doing something she hasn't had the chance to do for quite a while.
It will just shift slightly my family time. Obviously, I'll be with my kids in the morning for the first time.
Does it sound like her nose is making some weird...
Sounds like there's a clothespin on her nose.
She's doing that sort of... What movie am I thinking of where that guy talks? And then he speaks and then he kind of goes, he does the every so often. Is that Uncle Buck?
I'm not sure.
It will just shift slightly my family time. Obviously, I'll be with my kids in the morning for the first time in 15 years and be able to walk my fifth grader to school this year.
See, she's just like us. She's a normal person.
Mommy Dearest Couric says she'll be enjoying walking her daughter to school.
I'm very excited about that. I think I'm much more excited than she is and be able to be with my kids and make breakfast in the morning.
Yes, Katie says her brand new schedule will give her more family time.
I'll probably work 10 to 7, obviously, till the end of the newscast. And I'm hoping I'll get home at 7:30 to have dinner with my children because I think that's a really important but sometimes lost ritual for families today.
They'll arrive home to an empty home. And have to fend for themselves.
That's genius. Let's see. Rick, about voting for Storm, should we vote for her starting at 6 or 6:50 p.m. so she's not on the tote board at the end of the show? Because we're kind of at a disadvantage because East Coast polls are open first. This is what I've thought about. I know that we're talking about Storm early here, but I'm so... unclear about this because the program airs 3 hours earlier on the East Coast.
Correct. We always get sloppy seconds out here.
Well, they don't really know where you are, I would imagine, unless you're on a landline. Even if you're on a cell phone, they don't really know where you are. So
who is A?
How could they not know where you are if you're on a cell phone? You have a phone number that's run by a company. Of course they're tracking our every move.
Does that mean that if I have my cell phone and I'm in New York, I can't vote? Because it's a 503 number?
I don't know.
It's all very confusing.
Oh.
Somebody claimed, I had a friend of mine claim that he goes to the website and he starts voting like at 5 p.m. our time and that it tallies the votes. That there's no problem with it at all. That he votes through MSN.com and that he has no difficulty voting like hours and hours before it's supposedly possible. Derek, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, I have an older Toyota like you do, and I know about five guys with similar cars that can, their key will open and start my car.
Really?
Yep, and my key will open and start about half of theirs.
Don't you think that, I mean, look, I don't mean any disrespect to Toyota, but don't you think they'd take care of that or fix that at some point? That seems like what we would call a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem, but it's mostly just because the locks wear out, and it's just a matter of kind of jiggling the key.
All right. So that sounds simple enough.
So it's not attention thieves. So it's not so much that the key fits all the cars; it's that the lock eventually wears down to the point where it will be more forgiving in terms of what key it will accept.
Right. Yep. That's how it works.
And so the only solution to that is to have the whole thing rekeyed, which is probably prohibitively expensive for most people.
Yeah, I don't know how expensive that is. But that's pretty much the only solution to that.
Ah, great. Well, all right. That's fantastic. So really, if I get my Toyota back at any point, I shouldn't even really bother to lock it. I should just throw up my hands and what can you do?
Well, it'll keep out anyone that doesn't have a Toyota key.
Well, that's okay. That's true, I guess. So unless they've already stolen some sort of a Toyota, I guess I'm safe then.
Yeah, it's better to lock it because at least people who have like a Ford key or a Chevy key can't get into it.
Okay. Thank you, Derek.
Good luck in the truck.
All right. There you go. Thanks. That's Derek. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley.
Poor 11-year-old Amber Sharon of Salem. What a summer she's having. It all started when a 4-year-old baby doll named Baby was adopted as a fawn after his mother was hit by the car. Since then, Baby has lived in a 70-acre property outside of Walport. Amber and her family often visited the baby deer in
the
forest.
Is this story going to have a tragic ending?
Kind of.
Is this going to end with a hunter coming into the forest and the rabbit shrieking for everybody to run and no one listening?
Well, this was often a friendly beast to the whole family.
Oh, it was. We're already in the past tense with the deer.
But then the doe turned from friendly to, well, a foe, pinning Amber against the railing of a fence and pummeling the girl with its front hooves.
It pummeled the girl?
Mm-hmm.
How old is the girl?
11.
Fantastic.
Amber's father ran toward the deer, and then it turned and ran after him. He hid behind the tree, trembling. Amber came out of the attack with a bruised skull and a bruised jaw, along with cuts in her back. Wildlife experts say even friendly wild animals raised as tame and as family pets can turn into savage beasts at any moment.
So let's recap. So the deer, the mom, I'm at no point am I going to doe a deer, a female deer. I'm not going to make any of those jokes. So the mom
was hit. The mom of the deer.
The parent deer
yes.
was hit and killed by the dad, by this man?
By a car.
By a car, not their car.
No.
All right. So they found the baby deer, which is, and there was a doe.
Doe.
This is like when we talk about, what's his name? That guy, President Who from that place. It's a lot of who. Is a doe.
Named Baby.
Is it?
I would imagine it's a girl.
Listen, I have to get through this. Is it doe?
A doe is a deer, a female deer.
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, I'm trying to clarify the story so it's understandable to all.
I wasn't going to laugh. All right. Is a doe just a female deer or is it a baby deer? Because there's
if it's veal. If it's a baby female.
What's veal?
That's something that the French eat.
Is veal a cow?
Yeah.
It's a baby cow?
It's a baby calf that is kept in a confined space so that its muscle mass can never grow. So it's
savagely killed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a bit more of a detailed answer I was looking for. I'm saying there's no name for a baby deer, though. Doe refers to the gender, not the age.
This baby.
A fawn.
This baby deer
is a fawn. You're right. You're totally right about that.
Okay.
It's fawn. Fawn Leibowitz. Like three guys got that. Let's just take some of these. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. Okay, thank you, sir. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. Okay. And hello, Rick Emerson Show. Okay, there you go. Thanks.
Everyone was probably waiting to say fawn.
All gone. Okay.
Are there any further questions regarding this story?
Sophomore killed in kiln explosion. What am I saying here? So, what was my point? So they adopt the baby deer.
And raise it as their own.
And they raise it as their own. Now, here's what humans always do. Humans always think that they're going to raise the baby, you know, the whatever the creature is, the wild animal, and that the wild animal will somehow respect them and love them. And
like
not
in a Disney film.
Exactly the case. And then what happens? This girl, what was it, the 11-year-old girl gets, quote, pummeled by the deer?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. I couldn't ask for a better end to this story. That's genius. Did you see the, have you seen there's some webpage out there that is some Discovery Channel thing about a baby lion and a puppy that playing together and, you know, and they were all best of pals and whatever. And it ends fine for the puppy, but not so much for like the owner or the lion cub, because the owner had had a lion cub and a puppy and took an endless series of photographs, which she then posted to the web of like, look at the lion cub and the puppy playing together. Aren't they the best of pals? It's just like Homeward Bound 2. Now they're going to go on adventures and solve crimes together. And then one day the lion cub just got out a hair too big and just totally took a piece out of the owner's face. But I think the owner had reconstructive surgery and they killed the cub. So those things always end badly. You are not... You know what it is? Just like the woman who thinks that she's going to tame the bad boy rock and roll star and make him domesticated, you are not going to be the human who tames the wild animal. The wild animal will end up pummeling your daughter's teeth out. It's going to happen. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Yeah, you've made references now to three different movies, and you're leaving us all hanging. I mean, I know what they were. You were talking about Katie Couric with the noise she was making?
Yes.
That was Brad Pitt in California.
Well, I think I'm thinking of a different movie. I think I keep wanting to say it was Uncle Buck, where the guy would talk. He would say like, "So anyway, I'm doing the drywall down there." and then he would just make this horrible sound. I can't remember. Maybe it's California.
Pretty horrible, the sound Brad Pitt made in California. And then you've got Sound of Music, Go, right?
Yes.
And then Von Leibowitz is Cannibal House.
Yes, very good, sir.
Very good.
All right, thank you.
Booba,
see you.
Buy it.
All right,
too bad we don't have any prizes today.
Yes, too bad we have nothing to give away. Damn the luck. All right.
Booba, should buy it.
So let there be a lesson about raising wild animals.
You're all going to die.
You can't hug a mouse if you travel to an amusement park a few thousand miles from here.
Did you say you can't hug a mouse?
You can hug a mouse.
I don't understand.
Well, if you travel to a certain amusement park and spend thousands of dollars and bring your whole family, you can't be hugged by somebody dressed up as a mouse.
Is hug a mouse code for something?
No.
Booba, should buy it.
All right, back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. Scotty, do all of these people, they all know the movie answer? Should I just pick one at random? Well, let me just take the first person here. Hello, Justin. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, the movie you're thinking of, it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy and Steve Martin.
Oh, where they have to ride in the back of the truck.
Yeah, with the dog that tries to bite him when he gets the glove.
Yeah, and I was talking about, there was some movie where a character would punctuate, he would sort of speak, and then he would intersperse throughout his lines, he would speak a line, and then he would sort of make this horrible, like, sound, and it's kind of unnerving and impressive at the same time that I can duplicate that sound.
Yes.
But that's right, because he has the immortal line where they are going to lift the steamer trunk into the back of the truck, and the guy says, the guy points to his sort of hillbilly wife, and he says, "She can get it. She looks strong. The last baby came out sideways. She didn't scream or nothing." Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's exactly what it is. Well remembered, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. All right, thank you, sir. No, thank you. We come back to the phones here in a while. We'll get to John, who has an idea for snakes on a plane. Steamer truck. Scotty's right about this. Steamer trunk is right up there with the word gazebo. That if you were high, that would be hilarious. There's something about a steamer trunk because it almost sounds perverse in some way that I can't quite quantify. All right, back after an exclusive 3-year tour of Europe, Scandinavia, and the subcontinent, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, newly combat-trained and lethal, Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent from Washington, D.C. Lisa, how are you, sister?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, am I accurate when I say that? Have you, you've done your combat training?
No, believe it or not, that's still to come. Next week. Last week was when cleaning out the grandmother's basement.
Ah, okay. Well, that's, you know, dealing with relatives is sort of, that's combat training of a different sort, I suppose.
Yeah, it was good preparation. It's true.
So you did kind of a little vacation, you were recovering, and then you go at some point in the future to the combat training, kidnap training. Are they going to teach you how to handle guns and whatnot?
You know, I understand that they're going to teach us to recognize different guns and how to deal with different gunshot wounds. I don't think there's actual weapons training, which is probably good. Journalists are the last people that should be handling weapons.
I would agree with you. My advice to you is to take a huge roll of duct tape with you when you go, because it is my understanding that that can be used on the battlefield to close some sort of a sucking chest wound.
Okay, excellent. I'm already at the head of my class.
That may not be medically reliable advice, but I have learned that by watching many late-night made-for-television films starring Stacey Keach.
Ooh,
so
wow.
just in case anybody should ask.
You know, Lifetime, actually I was amazed to see that Lifetime television for women does play in Israel.
Really?
But it's worth it. Yeah, Meredith Baxter-Burney doing great.
It's good to know. So Meredith Baxter-Burney, so that is sort of like Eric Estrada, who has now got this whole second career going. What are those shows called that Eric Estrada does? They're like soap operas. They're called
telenovelas.
Telenovelas.
Did you do telenovelas? Oh, that's great.
No, those are great.
He had to learn to speak Spanish.
Meredith Baxter-Burney. You talk about. I saw her just the other day. I was watching All the President's Men again, and because that two-disc DVD set for All the President's Men came out, and Meredith Baxter-Burney, who I believe was just Meredith Baxter at that point before she married David Burney,
and now she's Meredith Baxter selling life insurance on TV.
Is that true?
Yeah.
She and Adam West. Meredith Baxter is in that movie, and just, you would talk about a woman who was just stunningly beautiful at that point in her life. She's still very attractive, but at that point was just blindingly hot.
I didn't realize she was in that. I've seen that movie a ton of times.
She is, Meredith Baxter is in All the President's Men, and she plays the wife of,
the treasurer?
Of Porter. She plays the wife of what's his name, Porter, at the White House, because Woodward and Bernstein come knocking for like the third time.
Hey.
And she answers the phone and she says, "This is an honest house." That's her big line. And she's pregnant, and she doesn't want them coming in and stressing her, and she's trying to get her husband to leave the political game and so forth. Great movie, great performance by her.
I had no idea, that's great.
You really ought to watch it. It's if you haven't seen that movie in a while, the brilliance leaps off the screen all over again. And it's got a commentary by Robert Redford, and sometimes those commentaries can be very tedious and uninteresting, but his is actually pretty great.
Oh, that's great. I probably saw it about 4 months ago, but I could see it again.
That's a movie, it is probably, this is now just the wankiest conversation ever, but it's one of the all-time great journalistic films, and there really aren't that many, I guess. There's that. There's Shattered Glass, which came out pretty recently. I don't know if you've seen Shattered Glass.
Network.
Network, which is my favorite film of all time, actually, which is, I actually just switched offices here at CBS Radio, and one of the accoutrements that's going to be going up on the wall behind my desk is a huge Network poster that is actually...
Oh, outstanding.
I actually found, now that we've just abandoned all pretense of talking about the news, I actually found on eBay a guy selling an original 1976 lobby poster for the movie Network, and it still has the thumbtack holes in the corner and everything from where it was hanging in a theater.
Oh, that's outstanding.
It's en route. It's going to be framed. It's going to be right opposite my Glengarry Glen Ross poster, and then all will be right with the world, Lisa Goddard.
Not going to take it anymore.
No. Exactly. There's all this news, I suppose, happening and so forth. But here's the thing is that George W. Bush was talking about Lebanon, and he said, well, I'm trying to think of the phrase he used. He said it was a front or a bad something, a front in the global war on terrorism, and sort of like Afghanistan and Iraq. And I guess my point is, my questions are twofold. One, is this, do we suspect this ceasefire or the break in hostilities? Is it really just a momentary break? Is it going to last for any length of time? And B, really, is there any place at this point that isn't a front in the global war on terrorism? It seems like that's such a vague and amorphous term of description that it could really apply to anything.
Yeah, it does seem that wherever American troops are, that is a front in the global war on terrorism. Generally speaking, anything that's in the news is a front. But you know, you can cut that two ways. You can say that is White House PR, but you can also say that's the nature of the war itself, that terrorism really has gotten into most corners of the world. It, to some extent, you know, we don't know to what extent, but so you can cut that two ways. But I think you're raising the right question here. I really don't think that this, I don't think anyone thinks this is a long-term solution. I think this is sort of both sides go back to your corners, and we'll see how long that'll hold. And I think the biggest sign of that, of course, is what your listeners have probably been hearing again and again today, that Hezbollah is claiming victory, and so is Israel.
Right.
So, clearly, these are two sides that are still in military stance. They're still trying to both gain some sort of, some sort of momentum out of this. And really, I think there's no sign that this has eased the long-term tensions at all.
And so it's just, I mean, it really is just a break in the action, and we're going to wait for it. It's sort of like the standoff of the OK Corral, where everybody's staring each other down, and you just wait for some guy to sneeze or twitch or blink wrong or move his hand a little too quickly, and then the thing erupts all over again. So
yeah, I think that's right. The people, though, that are hoping for peace, the biggest optimists out there, and there's not too many of them right now, but those optimists out there are saying, okay, well, at least while we've got these two sides each in their corner, maybe we can slowly let the air out of this tire, you know, slowly try and release this tension. Maybe over another decade, if we can keep things quiet long enough, maybe this will be our chance to just ease tensions enough to make real progress. But that moment hasn't come yet.
That, of course, will fail. Just in case you want to jump to the bottom of the page, I can tell you right now that's not going to happen.
Hasn't worked yet. Yeah.
No, it's true. And we wrap this up. By the way, we're talking about to jump back onto the movie thing for front. Movie front for a moment. If you've got the film store, video store, probably even like a Best Buy, a place like that, they are actually selling a box set. It's called The Power of the Media DVD set. I was just thinking about this, and it's Network, All the President's Men, and Dog Day Afternoon, all in one box set.
Oh, that's outstanding.
It really is fantastic. It's three different movies that kind of show from that 70s hard-boiled perspective, sort of the power of the media to turn something small into something overwhelming.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you should get, it's like $45, I think, for all three of those, so you should really check it out.
Oh, that's great.
All right, Lisa Goddard, we will talk to you very soon as everything unfolds. Good to have you back. We will speak to you soon, Lisa.
Good talking to you, Rick.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent there in Washington, D.C. She sounded glad to be back on the program.
She did.
She did.
I guess she passed her test.
What test are you talking about, Tim?
Her battle.
Oh, no, that's test. Not. No, that's not for a while.
Oh, it is.
All right. No. Love, the international language of love. You sounded like Ricky Smith's mom there for a second. This is just like the liqueur that Ricky's pappy used to make. Here's Tim Riley at the city desk.
There'll be one less push-up if we do the stopwatch.
Oh, fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, here's your stopwatch. Peel.
Esther L. Snyder, who with her husband founded the West Coast restaurant chain In-N-Out Burger, is dead at the age of 86. The family declined to release further details, including the cause of death.
The oxygen went out one last time and didn't go back in.
Esther and Harry Snyder opened the first In-N-Out at Baldwin Park in 1948. In-N-Out now has 202 restaurants in California, Arizona, and Nevada, but none here.
Here's what sucks about this. She's dead, but I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, she lived a very long life, and she was, 85?
86.
86.
Well, that's what happens to old people.
They die. That's what old people do.
Yeah.
Who can ask for anything more? So fantastic life, founded it, with her husband of a great restaurant. The problem is that as I understand this, now I may be getting the story incorrect, but I don't think I am. As I understand this, her nutcase children,
correct,
are fighting. Yeah, they're fighting with her. They have been fighting with her. Who fights with their parents over something like this? This is the problem with money, is it makes people do things they wouldn't normally do. Is that her kids have been fighting with her, and presumably her husband, who I think is still alive, for control of the restaurant chain, which is, look, as much as I would love to have an In-N-Out Burger here, as much as I would love to have one located right here, that will be the end. That will be the demise of the greatness of that chain, because you know the deal. You know why there's no In-N-Out Burger here. Because that chain started in L.A.? Hawthorne?
California.
Baldwin Park. Mm-hmm. And the deal is that they wouldn't put a restaurant, they wouldn't put a franchise or a location anywhere that they could not drive to inspect it.
Oh.
Which is why that they're in California, and there's one, they're in
Arizona
and
Nevada.
Yeah, they're in Nevada and Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to Vegas, you can get it, and obviously if you go to San Diego, blah, blah, blah. But they wouldn't put an In-N-Out Burger. They had offers for decades now. They've had people trying to get them to make it a nationwide chain, and they've resisted because their whole deal is, we want to go there, we want to be able to observe it firsthand, we want to make sure that they're sticking with what we told them to do. And of course, now that she's dead, the dad's going to die soon, and then the idiot kids are going to take it over, and they're going to whore the thing out, and it's going to completely lose all of the charm that makes it fantastic. Because we all know that, and I'm a big fan of that chain Fatburger, which is also in California, but really In-N-Out is the quintessential, it is the definitive American hamburger stand. I think everybody knows that. It is,
except for Tommy's.
Well, Tommy's is not bad. Again, it's like Fatburger to me. Mm-hmm. And I know that I tread in, these are dangerous
waters.
Well,
Tommy's is about the chili.
when you start talking about things like this, it's like talking about the place that has the best pizza, because everybody's very passionate about it. And I, again, I'm a big fan of Tommy's. I'm a big fan of a Fatburger. And then there's a million different places here in Portland. There's Stanich's, which is fantastic. There is a place called the Helvetia. I think it's the Helvetia Tavern is what it's called, where they have this hamburger that's like the size of a wheel. It's huge. It's massive. So I don't mean to knock any of those places, but I'm saying, despite what, you know, McDonald's, of course, is a, you know, it's a symbol of America the whole world over. All I'm saying is, if they were aliens out in space and you wanted to send them an example of, this is a hamburger, this is what America is all about, you would send them the double-double with cheese and fries.
Probably McDonald's is the very 70s. It started going downhill as far as everyone's first choice after that.
I think, I just believe that McDonald's has, I don't know, I will tell, I mean, I know that it's very fashionable just to bash on McDonald's for the heck of it. I've been honest about the fact that McDonald's has a lot of food that I actually like. And I really have had to crack down on myself, though. I've talked about my love for that Filet-O-Fish sandwich, they said, which was drilled into me as a young Catholic.
So is that square thing?
It is. It's the square fish patty.
My mom still eats those on Fridays during Lent.
Yeah, it's like, it's on the potato bun. It's great. I mean, look, I'm not.
Where do you catch things like that?
I'm not going to. The square in some sort of cartoon lake, where it just comes out with big eyeballs and a smile on it. I'm not going to claim that McDonald's food is all, you know, the people that McDonald's food is terrible. McDonald's food is not terrible. You may not want to eat it all the time, and it may not be exactly what your taste is. And you're a vegan, so clearly you're not going to be eating at McDonald's. But no one becomes that huge and that gigantic a corporation by selling food that no one likes.
Glamorous people eat there, according to the commercials.
Glamorous people who are real thin.
Yeah.
Perfect complexion. Uh-huh. But In-N-Out Burger has a certain something. There is a certain all-American, first of all. And I know it sounds like a big commercial for In-N-Out, but what are you going to do? The last time, because Joni had never been to one. And when we went to L.A. for that film festival a couple years ago with Remote Control, I'm like, we had the definitive In-N-Out Burger experience, because it's on, Sunset? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
And there's that high school right there.
Hollywood High.
Hollywood High. And have you ever been down Sunset Boulevard? It really is like you're inside a movie. And I know people say that a lot, but it is a palm tree lined street underneath, you know, the beautiful kind of Hollywood skies.
It's an American icon.
And right there is Hollywood High School. And it's a high school. Right there on Sunset Strip, down the street from the whiskey and the rainbow and the whatever. And I mean, it really is something like you would only see in a film. There's one of those in San Diego, too. There's a place called Ocean Beach High, where it's a school. And like from the classroom, like you can see the beach and the ocean and the surfers and the whatever. And it's like when 3 o'clock comes around, you hear the bells ring, the front doors of the school open, and like dudes walk out with their surfboards, and they walk out of school and they walk about 100 yards right down to the beach and start surfing. It is a thing that you think only exists in teen movies and Beach Boy songs. But so we walk by Hollywood High on, you know, underneath the palm trees. We're walking by all of these rock and roll icons. We walk into In-N-Out, and it was the total In-N-Out experience. You walk in, and there's the guy literally out of the sink taking a freshly cleaned and scrubbed potato, putting it in the little slicing thing, clunk, you know, dices it or whatever that thing is, you know, makes it into fry, cooks it, strains it, salts it right on our plate. It was just, you know, from a potato to fries in front of you in like 2 minutes. Beautiful. It was a fantastic American experience. Let's see. This is John speaking of great American experiences. Hello, sir.
Yeah. I was in Prescott, Arizona for about 9 months, and there was an In-N-Out Burger there. Didn't quite have the same glorious... I had an awesome view of Walmart, and that was about the extent of it.
That is American, too, in its own hideous way.
Yeah. Hey, yes. I have an idea for your Snakes on a Plane.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you auction those tickets off and give the proceeds to whatever animal shelter you guys banty for?
Maybe something that tends to ailing snakes and other reptiles.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of these animal hospitals take in reptiles that, you know, it's like, oh, look, Johnny brought home a huge snake he bought from, you know, Chucky at school, and they can't do anything with it. But I was just, my idea would be a new way to raise some money for
you know, for those animal shelters.
That is true. In fact, I just got the card. Can I just tell you this? Because we have a dog who's constantly getting it, and I will not bore you with dog stories. But I've talked to this, my dog, you know, he'll see a pound of thumbtacks and decide that he should just, I'm going to eat these thumbtacks and see what they taste like. So we got the, and once you go to a place like Dove Lewis, which is the 24-hour mm-hmm. dog, like, save your dog's life after he's eaten 10 pounds of Baker's chocolate, which we've also had to do in hospital, they will put, you are on the mailing list for life. And they have the greatest, most manipulative technique for getting you to donate money. I open it, and it's a postcard from Dove Lewis, and it's a postcard from Dove Lewis asking for a donation, and it's a postcard written, it's in the form of a letter written by a dog whose right. life they saved. My name is Scrappy. You know, I ate,
I ordered pork battery acid on me.
Exactly. I ate a hand grenade. And the folks at Dove Lewis took the hand grenade. They patched me right up. Won't you please help? And by the end of it, you know,
you're big, wiping away the tears.
Big tough guy at the end of it. Oh, to poor Scrappy, you know, and then
here, take my truck, sir.
Totally.
Oh, that's actually, that right now.
That's the, why do you got to twist the knife like that? Why is it going to be that way? Well, that's a great idea. Thank you, sir.
No problem. Thank
you. All right,
you.
There you go. Thank you. That's John. All right, here's Tim Riley at the city desk.
In the meantime, Mrs. In-N-Out is dead.
There you go. Dead, dead, dead. There's your snub watch. Thank you. Forget, we're going to be talking to David Ellis, who's the director of Snakes on a Plane. That's coming up later on. Oh, here we go. Rick, about In-N-Out. They claim, okay, somebody's claiming there was one here. Rick, there was an In-N-Out burger in Vancouver back in 1991. Hmm. That seems so unlikely. I'm not saying it's not true, man. Obviously, it was.
It might not be a real one.
I wonder if it was a not. Well, you know, there was that Tommy's here.
And the sign said, yes, it is, and no, it wasn't.
Yes. Does anybody know what we're talking about? Yeah. What is that place down? Well, it's by
triangular building.
It's right by Spartacus. But that's, why is it that I can only ever think of embarrassing landmarks? Where do you live? I'm in a wife swappers club. Where was the Tommy's? By Spartacus. right by the bathhouse. There was this place downtown. So tempting to say where they sold meat. There was a place downtown, though. Yeah, it's that triangular building, kind of like by the Crystal, and, you know, that by Everyday Music. And this is like last year, 2 years ago, and there was a place called Tommy's. And again, Tommy's a very famous California chain, and they had, and it was the same font, yeah. The same everything, mm-hmm. And there was a sign up front saying, yes, it is, presumably, yes, it is the same as. In fact, my wife, who is a huge Tommy's fan, that is her favorite chain far and away. Mm-hmm. My wife grew up as a kid spending a lot of time in Burbank going to Tommy's. And so she's like, oh, there's a Tommy's. It looks like it's the same. And so we went there, and that was her first question to this guy who was running this Tommy Burger downtown in Portland. She's like, are you related to the California Tommy's? And the guy's like, yes, we are, ma'am. Have a hamburger.
Here's my cousin from Hawthorne.
Exactly. And then, of course, we found out like 6 months later, not at all, and they got sued right out of business. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a knockoff. Anyway, but he says there was an In-N-Out Burger in Vancouver. Listen to this. But they had way too many health code problems, including lots of hair in the French fries. Now it's a coffee shop.
Sasquatch burger.
That's Chris. All right. What am I doing here? This is Bob. Hello, Bob.
How you doing, Rick?
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, I heard an interview today with one of the stunt girls, Snakes on a Plane, and some of the situations you're in, just to get an idea of what your listeners are going to be in for. One word, barf bag.
What do you mean?
She said she had to use a barf bag on the plane, and the snake was inside.
Oh.
Takes her on the tongue.
Fantastic.
Okay, here's another one for you. Toilet.
Snakes in a toilet. Now, let me just tell you this. Now, I will just shatter the illusion right now that we're going to have this interview later with David Ellis, who directed Snakes on a Plane. It is a pre-taped interview. It is not live. And I never, ever, ever pre-tape interviews because they always sound so bad and wooden. But it's Snakes on a Plane. What are you going to do? I had no choice. So.
Yeah. True.
But it's funny that we were talking to him, and we made the observation after the interview was over that everybody except for Sam Jackson is taking the movie really seriously.
It's going to be a cult movie, I do believe.
But, I mean, Sam Jackson is just like, snakes on an MF and plane. It's badass. You know, whatever.
I mean,
he's totally just aware of the kitsch. We talked to the actor yesterday. We talked to this director today, and he's there. I mean, I think they recognize that it's a cult hit already, but they're taking it very seriously. They're not treating it like a B-movie at all. Apparently, it's got some moments that are very, very scary. So, I'm looking forward to
it. It seems to me that every nightmare you can think of that includes snakes is going to be portrayed in this film. I mean, she said there was it took 15 people to load this anaconda into the plane. 15 people. And, guy in a seat, anaconda wraps itself around him and blows his head off or something. Stuff like that. It's just going to be brutal.
I can't wait. That's going to be fantastic. We're going to be giving away tickets for that, so be listening, sir.
That's fantastic.
All right,
fantastic.
Thank you,
Bob. Anyway, bud, you have a good day.
Thank you. All right, there you go. That's Bob. All right. Let's see. Should we break? What should we be doing here?
What time? I thought the interview was at 1. Is that
no,
what you wanted to play?
Well, I'm going to play it, but I mean, it's pre-taped. It's in the can. He'll talk whenever we want him to talk. Here's what we got. We got the snakes on a plane. We got the interview with that guy. We got the Donna Mike thing we got to play and all that. Let's take this one more call. Brian, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. About the whole Tommy's thing and being up here in Portland, all that kind of thing. There was also a place down in Oregon City probably 6-7 years ago, OC, as it were. It was called Ronnie's. And they had the same deal, font and everything. And they actually served, and I ate there several different times. They actually served a hamburger that tasted exactly like an In-N-Out burger, and they had a Tommy burger. And as I remember, the deal was the woman who worked there, like her husband used to work for the Tommy's chain or something like that. So he actually like had the recipe, or his mom had the recipe for their chili.
Excellent.
It was killer. And then throw in the like roller derby or something, and like she was a roller derby queen back in the day. And it's all very confusing and troubling, but there's some useful information for your show.
Fantastic, sir. That is the currency of the realm here on the Rick Emerson Show.
And we love it. Keep up the good work, man.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
Even in L.A. itself, there are different spellings of Tommy's under different
chains. Is that true?
There is a T-O-M-M-I-E-S and also a Tammy's.
Now, see, and now I'm all confused about the one that I go to in Burbank. I just don't know.
No, that is T-O-M-M-Y apostrophe S.
Now, is that the original? That's the real deal? Okay. Is that the original Tommy's? The actual first location?
The original one is at Beverly Boulevard.
Oh, really? Okay, I have gone to that one then, because that's where our movie screened was, right in that area.
Yep,
and I went to a Tommy's right there. Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. All right.
That's one of the smaller ones. I don't think that one had a drive-up.
Now, how would you know about their chili? You're a vegan.
But I've had friends that eat that stuff.
Oh, really? Okay. I was wondering if it was just like, you felt like, even though I'm a vegan, I have to have it. No, it is legendary.
Everyone eats that stuff.
It's legendary, man. You get whatever it is. And
you're full for the rest of the starving actors. They have one of those a day and they're set.
It's true. No, you can eat cheap there. And yeah, it feels, you don't need to eat for like a day and a half. It's amazing.
And grab a whole handful of paper towels because people need them.
It's so bad for you, but it's so great.
Bad thing to eat while driving.
It's true. Okay. Well, we should break here. Coming up, we got an interview with David Ellis, director of Snakes on a Plane. We'll talk about Storm Large. Now we're all filled with dread and terror. Don and Mike give the AM 970 sales staff tips on how to sell this radio station. Dennis Pitzenbarger, We Can Geek, and all that. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.
She told me she'd love me, and I told her that I'd do the same. And I just can't remember her name. I brought it on myself, and I guess.